The MMQB podcast brought to you by the SeatGeek app, the easiest way to find a great deal, pay for your ticket, and get to your seat. Download the SeatGeek app and enter our code MMQB for $20 off your first tickets. We're also sponsored by FanDuel, the leader in one-week fantasy football, with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Enter the promo code TheMMQB at FanDuel.com for a bonus match of up to $200. I think in a matchup of dads, the Matthews dad beats Howie Long.
You think Bruce Matthews could take Howie Long in a fist fight?
I really do. Yeah, I think Howie's been in the studio too long. It's a worthless exercise, but we're going to do it because it's fun.
Yeah, worthless show coming up, but, you know, stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB podcast. Andy, we've got a great show for the people today. It's a landmark show. It's the season preview episode. You and I are going to pick the divisions. We're going to pick the AFC and NFC championship games and the Super Bowl. And we will probably be extremely wrong.
Yeah, and then our kind listeners, as I learned last year throughout last season after I picked Tampa Bay, our kind listeners will save this somehow and then tweet it back to us in January when everything's backwards.
I think you're giving our podcast a little bit too much credit, as always.
Well, I would have thought that too, but I'm telling you, people remember this stuff. I don't know how.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, it's a little bit frustrating because no matter where you work in whatever capacity you're in covering the NFL, you have to make season predictions. Often you have to pick games. And at this point, deciding or guessing what's going to happen in the winter when we've gone through so many huge injuries at that point, it's just it's a worthless exercise. But we're going to do it because it's fun.
Yeah, worthless show coming up, but stay tuned.
Well, there is a little bit of value to just talking these through and kind of going through how we feel about each team and then revisiting that down the road. The first division that we want to start with is the NFC East. You and I ended up, picking independently, but agreeing on a lot of things. This is one of those divisions. I have the Cowboys winning it with Philadelphia, New York, and Washington coming in second, third, and fourth, and you have it the same way. So my question for you is, in your mind, what would have to happen for the Cowboys to fall short of winning this division?
Well, when Orlando Scandrick blew up his knee, that gave me pause because I was thinking Dallas in terms of Super Bowl contention. Without Scandrick, though, they become a more limited defense, as we talked about last week. He gave them the element of man-to-man coverage. He could give man-to-man coverage in the slot and on the perimeter. And I think without him, they're very thin at cornerback. When you're thin at cornerback and you're pretty good along the front four, you're more likely to be a zone-based defense, which is fine if you're good at that. I'm more into multiplicity, though. And I think of these two teams, I think Philadelphia has the better defense because of all the different things they can do. And the guys they brought in this past offseason, we've seen clearly they want to be a physical defense outside and be multidimensional inside and have a lot of blitzes, a lot of different fronts and packages. I like that kind of football. I think it's harder to play against. I also think stylistically, Philadelphia's offense is harder to play against because of the tempo. Having said that, there are question marks in their personnel on offense. I do think Dallas will have a dominant running game like they did a year ago. And so I'm reluctantly choosing the Cowboys. I think if Philadelphia wound up in the final two of the NFC, if they were in the championship round, I would not be surprised, though.
Yeah. The interesting to note about Dallas, you don't often see this kind of disparity between the first half of a schedule and the second half. The Cowboys have the 13th hardest schedule in weeks 1 through 9, which is above average difficulty. The 30th hardest schedule weeks 9 through 17. Once again, this is based on last year's results. So do you put any stock in that, given that, a lot of these teams will be better or worse?
No, I put zero stock in that sort of thing because I'm of the belief that NFL games are hard to win each week, and if you don't come out with your best game, you're not going to win in the NFL. So strength of schedule, keep in mind also there's not a big sample size with that, and it gets skewed. You can help your own strength of schedule or hurt it by winning and losing. If you go out and beat your first six opponents, then your strength of schedule is going to be weak because you just dealt six losses to your opponent. So, and I know this is based on last year's, I think all that stuff's incredibly overrated though.
Yeah. Do you think that there's any chance that Washington somehow doesn't come in last in this division? And please don't say if they start Colt Brennan at quarterback instead of Kirk Cousins.
You mean Colt McCoy.
Colt McCoy, yes.
That's actually exactly what I'm going to say. I think if Colt McCoy becomes their quarterback at some point this season, they've got a chance to be a decent offense. I think Kirk Cousins, There's a difference between these two quarterbacks, and I am not a Colt McCoy fan, but I'm not a big Kirk Cousins fan either. The difference is Colt McCoy is a limited quarterback. Kirk Cousins, and especially Robert Griffin, who I think is totally out of the picture, maybe we'll talk about that in a second, those guys are flawed quarterbacks, and the differences are gargantuan, because with a limited quarterback, there are certain things you can't do, and McCoy's limitations pertain mainly to his arm strength or lack thereof. So there are certain things you cannot do. But with the flawed quarterbacks, there are certain things that you can't do, but you don't know what those certain things are. They're inconsistent. The offense is designed to function one way, and it's not guaranteed to function that way because the quarterback doesn't execute. And in Cousins' case, he's an inconsistent accuracy. In Griffin's case, it's a total lack of pocket poise. And when you have a flawed quarterback, you don't know what you're getting week to week. And this is an excellent coaching staff in Washington, a really well-designed offense. And I think if you go with the limited quarterback, at least you know what you're getting and you get a chance to use that Jay Gruden-designed offense. With Kirk Cousins, though, he's one thing one week and another guy the next week. And that's the definition of inconsistency. And in his case, it's led to turnovers. So I think if McCoy can get the starting job at some point this season, and I think he will. I think he's going to wind up starting eight games or so. Then it's a pretty good offense. Because, Robert, tell me where there any other holes are on this offense. Maybe the front lines. I think that's a good old line that they have. Maybe not great, but every other spot on this offense, including the old line, to me looks very shored up.
Yeah. At this point, I have to assure the listeners that we won't spend 10 minutes talking about every division and 5 minutes talking about the last place team in every division.
Yeah, but this is Washington. It's the East Coast. We got to be East Coast biased because that's just what national media does. we wouldn't be doing right by our brand if we didn't spend way too much time on the NFC East and especially on Washington.
Man, we're out here representing the West Coast of Sports Illustrated. You being in Idaho and me being in Chicago, we are essentially the West Coast of the magazine, of the website.
That's a coast to you?
Well, I mean, who is based in California? There's nobody.
All right, let me ask you this, since you brought up Chicago, because I noticed on your predictions, we both have Green Bay winning the NFC North. You put the Bears, I've got the Vikings in second in the NFC North, the Lions third, which I think most people have, so I don't think it's that interesting. I have the Bears fourth, obviously, but you put the Bears second, didn't you?
I did, and as I actually looked back on a couple of their preseason games, the Indianapolis one especially. And after I turned this in, I felt like changing it, but I was like, we'll just go through the show with it. Look, I think that Adam Gase is going to have a tremendous effect on Jay Cutler. I had high hopes for that offense with Kevin White, the number 7 pick, and Alshon Jeffrey. Now you're talking about White being out for the season and Alshon Jeffrey entering the season with a lingering ankle problem. So your receivers are Eddie Royal and Josh Bellamy, who has 0 catches in the NFL. The offensive line is going to have to be reshuffled because they can't find a right tackle. So you'll probably end up putting Kyle Long at right tackle, and he's excelled at guard, and moving maybe Vladimir Ducos to right guard. So I think that all of those things are a little bit too dubious to justify my prediction of second place. If I may, I'd like to take it back.
Okay. Well, that's a great aggressive way to start off right here well, on our first disagreement.
Okay, well, let's...
All right, let me make the case for Chicago being the second best team. I don't think they will, but for discussion's sake.
Sure.
I think this offense has to go through Matt Forte. And you can say, well, yeah, it did a year ago because I know he caught 102 balls. He had about almost 1,100 yards rushing. But a lot of those passes were dump-off passes last season. I think Forte needs to be the nexus of everything they do. For one, I think they need to be a run-first offense. For two, I think they need a quick-timing offense with defined reads, with Forte and screen passes, slot and option routes, those kind of things, to really tighten the leash on Cutler. Everyone's tried to tighten the leash on Jay Cutler, and they try to do it with his mechanics. His mechanics are not going to be fixed. I mean, what is he, 30-something years old at this point? So the next solution is to rein him in via the play calling. And he really hasn't had an offensive coordinator that's fully done that. Trestman was more of a downfield play caller. Mike Martz before that.
Wouldn't you say that Martz did that to a degree, though? I think he had his best season under Martz.
I think, see, if it was years ago, I'd have to go back and look closer, but Martz's offense was mostly seven-step dropbacks. I think if you're going to drop back seven steps, you're asking Jay Cutler to hold the ball longer, therefore read the field longer, and be a quarterback longer, have more mechanics in place. I think if you get the ball out of his hands quickly, which is what Gase did with Peyton Manning in Denver, I think that's where you get a chance to get him the discipline that he needs in order to succeed.
Yeah. I think the big question in the NFC North is not necessarily who will win it, but who gets that wild card spot between the Vikings and the Lions. You say the Vikings. What gives you confidence that Teddy Bridgewater in his second season with a healthy Adrian Peterson are going to get the better of Detroit over the course of their two meetings and the course of the whole regular season?
Well, I think this is where we shift this conversation to the defensive side. And we ought to mention Chicago's defense is in shambles right now. They don't have the right personnel to run their new system, the 3-4. That's why I've got them going last. I look at Minnesota's defense, and I think it's a top 10 caliber talent-wise across the league. And it's in a very good system under Mike Zimmer. And they're only going to be better in year two under Zimmer, especially now that they have more depth at cornerback, which gives Zimmer more options for the double A gap blitzes that he likes to do. So there's that side of it. And then, Robert, you mentioned Adrian Peterson back. You've got a great defense. You've got an upgraded offensive running game. You're a run-first offense, and Bridgewater's in his second season under Norv Turner, who's a very good play-action designer. So a running game with a play-action element to it. And by the way, you brought in Mike Wallace, which stretches the field on play action. So I think they've got the right pieces to hide and contain Bridgewater while he develops. And then on Detroit's side, defensively, Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley being gone fundamentally changes everything they do on defense. And last year, they thrived by having the league's number one ranked run defense. They will not be the number one run defense this season. They won't be top 10 this season.
Yeah, I think that part of DeAndre Levy's success over the course of his career has been being having the benefit of a strong defensive line, having Sue, having Fairley when he's, you know, healthy, up and running. He's probably the best player on that defense, and he's not necessarily a guy who's going to stuff the hole between the tackles and set the tone in run defense. He's a guy who you want on the field on third and long, second and long, when the defense is looking at some of the intermediate passing options. So I agree with you, and I don't think the Lions are built to handle what the Packers or the Vikings are going to be throwing at them on offense in the NFC North.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up Levy, and I know I think it was you and Jenny and Peter on the training camp tour talked about him at length. And that needs to be the case. This guy should have been voted All-Pro last season, certainly to the Pro Bowl, and probably first or at least second team All-Pro. He was outstanding, and you're exactly right. He's a space-oriented guy. He's not a thumper. I know they got Haloti Ngata. Not as a replacement for Fairley, though. Stylistically, he's closer to Fairley. He is not Ndamukong Suh. They've got a hole in that position. So you diminish your linebacking core without those D linemen. I'm real curious to see how Levy performs this season because of the different circumstances, but he is their best defensive player, no question.
Let's move on to a division that I got a really good taste of during the training camp tour, and that's the NFC South. you and I have a couple of disagreements here. I'll read you my picks. I go Saints, Falcons, Panthers, Bucks, and you flip-flop the top two. You think they finish Falcons, Saints, Panthers, Bucks. Would your opinion change on the top two finishers in this division in any way if Kelvin Benjamin, Panthers wide receiver, had been able to stay healthy and hadn't suffered the season-ending leg injury?
No, not really. I think all that does, his absence takes Carolina from a quality-wise from being probably an 8-8 type of team to maybe a 6-10 or 7-9 type of team. I don't think it's a huge. Now maybe that's good enough in the NFC South. I mean, this is whoever wins this division will once again have not lost the division. That's really what it's all about in the South, because I don't like any of these four teams, quite frankly. I think Atlanta has a big learning adjustment to make in the new system under Dan Quinn defensively. I know you're very high on Desmond Trufant, as am I, but I don't think they've got the right overall cornerbacking situation to do what Quinn's going to want to do there. I think they can maybe outscore their way out of it at times. Now, I know the Saints have offensive firepower as well, but they've got even more questions on defense. They have no pass rush. Keenan Lewis is injured right now, and they're young in certain positions or incohesive in certain positions, at linebacker mainly. So I don't like either of these teams at the top of the division, but obviously I don't like Carolina or Tampa Bay much either.
Yeah, I think the big deciding factor for me in picking the Falcons over the Saints would be the Saints losing the production of Junior Gallette. You know, once again, we've discussed him on the podcast before. Jettisoned from New Orleans in the middle of a big contract after he became apparently a huge locker room cancer. But you could make the case that he was the defensive MVP for them last year. I think losing that piece gives the Falcons the edge in that matchup, especially with Julio Jones back with Matt Ryan.
Yeah, because what you have with Gallette, he was not, you know, he's not Reggie White, but he was a guy who could at least turn the corner as a pass rusher. And so you could line him up on the weak side and reasonably expect to generate pressure with him winning on an island. That's important, because that's the difference between having to blitz and not blitz. And when you remove him from the lineup, maybe Kikaha, their new rookie, can give that element, although everything I've heard about him is that he's more of a thumper type guy, someone who will win in traffic, very similar, not exactly the same, but conceptually similar to Cameron Jordan in that sense. So they don't have a guy who can burn offensive linemen in space, and therefore everything they're going to do has to be manufactured schematically. Rob Ryan can do that. He's done that before, but that gets back to now you're counting on your secondary a lot. This is why they signed Brandon Browner for not big money, but they brought him in over the offseason. It's also last year where they signed Jairus Byrd, because they're trying to be deep in the secondary and dynamic there so that they can play man coverage and bring pressure. But I'm skeptical of the secondary because those safeties underachieved a year ago. Keenan Lewis isn't healthy to begin the season right now. And then let's also talk, their run defense wasn't very good a year ago. So I think there are holes in New Orleans, and traditionally they've had an offense that can overcome them. But I think this offense is going to change this season. I think it's going to have to become a little bit more ball-controlled, a little less vertical.
Yeah. You mentioned Brandon Browner. He's a guy that I caught up with this offseason. Imagine for a moment if the Saints were able to defy all the odds and win a Super Bowl. Brandon Browner will have been on three different Super Bowl winning teams in three seasons, from Seattle to New England to New Orleans.
Yeah, has anyone, and I wouldn't expect, I don't have the answer. I don't think you would off the top of your head. I wouldn't expect it. Has anyone ever done that?
I don't think so, but I won't swear on it. I think it was Charles Haley who won Super Bowls with three different teams, but I don't think it was back to back like that.
Well, and Dion won it with the Cowboys and Niners back to back, but that was, you know, that was it. Tweet us at use the hashtag #TheMMQBPodcast. It's at Andy_Benoit or at Robert Klemko if there's someone that we're overlooking. And we'll mention it next week then.
Yeah, and we'll credit you.
Yeah, no, well, absolutely, Chris. Yeah, we'll retweet it. We'll do everything. You know, maybe it's something that we ought to research beforehand. But I can't think of any. Certainly, no player of consequence comes to mind.
Right.
And I think we would both agree Browner is a player of consequence, right? I mean, he's someone you could argue maybe he's the difference in New England last year, and maybe the difference in Seattle the year before.
I think that at this point in his career, his physical ability is tailing off a little bit, but he's making up for it with smarts. I mean, you just look at the last play of the Super Bowl. Malcolm Butler makes the incredible interception, but I don't think it happens that way if Brandon Browner doesn't recognize what's coming from the Seattle offense.
Yeah, no question about it. And he's 31 years old, so it's not like he's ancient. But when you're a real physical guy, when your game's predicated on physicality rather than quickness and speed, then I think you can manufacture an extra year or two of productivity that way. You don't have to. He doesn't have to run with guys the same way that other cornerbacks with different styles would have to run with guys.
We touched on the Seahawks a little bit in that Super Bowl. Let's move on over to the NFC West before we go to the AFC. You and I disagree on one point, but we both have the Seahawks winning the division. I say it goes Seahawks, Cardinals, Rams, 49ers. You say Seahawks, Rams, Cardinals, 49ers. Do you?
So it's the Rams. That's the key. I think the Rams are going to be very good this season, and you think they're trash.
I don't think that they're trash. I honestly feel like Carson Palmer, fully healthy, gives the Cardinals the edge in terms of a wild card bid in the NFC West.
And I can understand that. I think what Arizona's done over the last 2 years is absolutely remarkable, though. To me, it's somewhat smoke and mirrors. It's largely based on coaching, which maybe that's stable and translates from year to year. Offensively, they're extremely well designed. My concern is defensively, they've lost some personnel over the last couple of seasons. And I look at like their inside linebacker position this season with Kevin Minter, who's been an enormous disappointment. Sean Weatherspoon, who's been injured and has never been in this kind of system before. If you're that weak up the middle of the defense, and plus they're inexperienced at nose tackle, that's a problem. And that's a problem, especially in the NFC West, where the Rams are a between the tackles power-based running team. The Seahawks, we know what they are. And the 49ers, if they want to have any shot at anything this year, are going to have to also pound
the one player that you don't mention in that analysis, which I think is the key between any sort of competition between the Cardinals and the Rams, is a new quarterback in St. Louis, Nick Foles. Now, you have not watched any of the preseason because you don't watch the preseason, which I think is a mistake. But we've discussed that
No. It's a mistake to think that's a mistake. Come on.
We've discussed that on previous podcasts. We don't have to get into it. Why do you?
The preseason paints a false picture. You know what the preseason does? It makes someone who went out on a limb and boldly declared the Chicago Bears to go second in the NFC North to all of a sudden cower at the pick and retreat back into a corner and say the same thing everybody else says. That's your preseason.
Okay. Why do you think, from the film that you have absorbed over the course of the regular season, over the past several years, Nick Foles fits in with what St. Louis wants to do on offense?
Well, because he can hand the ball off. I mean, they're not going to ask a lot of their passing game in St. Louis. They're going to play out of base personnel the entire time almost. I mean, we'll see a few three receiver sets, but for the most part, this will be a traditional two back or two tight end offense. It's going to be a run first approach. The reads in the passing game will be very defined, which is what Nick Foles needs. And that fits his style. He is not a spread system type QB. I know he had that remarkable statistical season in Philadelphia 2 years ago, but there's a reason the Eagles traded him as well. And Foles has a methodical nature to him. He needs time in the pocket. He needs functional space in order to operate. And the Rams know that, and their new coordinator, Frank Cignetti, I would imagine is going to work around that and be a very, very run-first team.
Can I tell you my favorite thing about covering St. Louis games?
Yeah, of course.
Well, first of all, I'm based in Chicago, so I go to Bears games more often than not, and I see Kyle Long, brother of Rams defensive end Chris Long. And after the games, win or lose, Kyle Long is sitting at his locker with all of his gear on, only his helmet off, and he's just staring at the ground between his legs. And everybody else is, you know, getting undressed, getting showered, getting dressed. Kyle Long is always the last guy out of the locker room because he is meditating on the game that just happened. Never seen it before. I go to St. Louis after I noticed that with Kyle, and Chris Long is doing the exact same thing. And I said, "Did you know that your brother does this in Chicago?" And he said, "Oh, no, I had no idea." And I was like,
"Really? He didn't have any idea?"
He didn't have any idea that his brother goes through the same routine. And I said, what are you doing when you're doing that?" He said, "I'm going over every play in the game and just kind of thinking about the things I did well and the things I should have done differently and how it impacted the outcome." They're doing.
Do you believe him that he doesn't? Maybe he's messing with you.
He was.
That he doesn't know.
He was genuinely surprised about it. I think it must have something to do with them and their father and their routine after games when they were kids.
Yeah, it would have to be. That's very interesting. You know, both of those guys have really panned out as well. And that's, we talk about the Matthews family, and I know we got to move on to the AFC here, but which is more impressive, the Matthews family or the Long family for a football dynasty?
Well, so with the Matthews, you have Clay and you have Casey, who I guess is a cousin, or is he a little brother?
He's a younger brother.
Okay. With the Longs, you have Chris and Kyle, who are at the top of their positions, and a Hall of Fame dad. So I'd have to give it to them just for consistency of success and production over all three, all three members of the family there.
Yeah, and then Bruce Matthews and Clay Matthews, I wasn't privy to their career. I mean, I know what they did, but I didn't see them week in and week out. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was hoping, you know, either way, I think both have been fine. Which family would win in a fist fight, would you say?
That's a great question. I think I would have to go with the Matthews clan. They're
over the Long clan. The Longs are defensive linemen. I mean, we got to move on. But the Longs are defensive linemen. Don't you think that helps a little bit?
I think the
versus line. I guess the offensive lineman though, Bruce Matthews, huh?
I think in a matchup of dads, the Matthews dad beats Howie Long.
You think Bruce Matthews could take Howie Long in a fist fight?
I really do. Yeah, I think Howie's been in the studio too long.
Huh. All right.
Well, anyway, before we get to the AFC, I wanted to tell you guys about SeatGeek, one of our valued sponsors. From the NFL's Week 1 to Super Bowl 50 in Santa Clara, there's nothing like seeing the action up close. If you've never made it to a game in person, make it this year. And do it with our new sponsor, SeatGeek. With the new app, it's easy to find a great deal, pay for tickets, and get to your seat with a few taps of your phone. And for listeners of this show, if you use the promo code MMQB in the SeatGeek app and get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. It takes less than a minute to download, and the app is free in iPhone and Google Play stores. SeatGeek does a ton of things that other ticketing sites don't. Just like you can consolidate flight and hotel options online, SeatGeek pulls in ticket options from hundreds of online ticket sellers to create a one-stop shop for sports and concert tickets. Also, they have this great feature called Deal Score. It ranks every ticket on the market with a 1 to 100 value score and plots the best deals on a color-coded map of the venue. To redeem your promo code and save $20 on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app today. Enter promo code MMQB in the app. SeatGeek will then send you $20 once you've made your first SeatGeek purchase. With that, we're going to move on to the AFC and start with the AFC East. You and I agree, for starters, that the Patriots will still win the division, regardless of whether or not Tom Brady is suspended for his role in the Deflategate scandal. After that, we disagree on a few things.
Well, I go all back and forth on this AFC because you've got two teams with great defenses and no quarterback, and then you've got the Miami Dolphins who are at best good in almost every area, great in none, and probably not that good on defense. So I guess not every area. It's a matter to me of which defense is better, Buffalo or New York's, because I think they're both gonna win with that side of the ball. They're that good. And to me, I think the Jets are the better defense because of the Revis factor and what Todd Bowles can do with his pressure schemes. And also, they're impossible to run against with that front three that they have, and maybe a front four given the depth they have there now.
I am inclined to agree with you. I do think that the quarterbacks matter. I think that the Bills have the slight edge there if they go with Tyrod Taylor. There are some gimmicky things that you can do with a guy like Tyrod that teams are not necessarily prepared for. There's not a lot of film on the guy, but hearing rave reviews in Baltimore in practice, imitating various quarterbacks around the NFL, and I think he was big for them in terms of preparing them for a lot of the starters that they faced, especially during their Super Bowl run. And I think that he will have a marginally good first season as a full-time starter.
Yeah, I'm eager to see what he does because it's, you said gimmicky things, and it's Tyrod Taylor mixed with Percy Harvin and LeSean McCoy that has me real interested, because now we're talking about some serious misdirection capability, jet sweeps, throwbacks, screens, wide receiver screens, swing passes, stuff that gets the defense flowing one way and the ball going the other way. And then also on top of it all, read option, probably triple option, read option stuff. So it's, and Greg Roman's designing the run game, one of the best run game designers in all of football. So it's, I'm real curious to see how this goes with Tyrod Taylor. I'm not at all surprised that they picked him to start over Castle and certainly over EJ Manuel. I'm not so sure. I'm not. I know he's out right now, but I'm not as down on Geno Smith as the rest of the world seems to be. I think if he's healthy and when they have him back in the lineup, I think you can run an offense with Geno Smith, especially if you put a guy like Brandon Marshall into the equation, someone who doesn't necessarily need to be open in order to catch passes. He can make contested catches. Geno Smith has a wider margin for error now, and he's always been willing to play from the pocket, sometimes to a fault, but at least he's willing to hang in there. And when you're willing to do that, you're easier. It's like what we talked about with the guys in Washington. At least you know what you can design around. At least your play designs can all maintain their integrity because you've got a drop-back quarterback.
I know that you don't watch any preseason, but our wonderful producer, John Daigle, thank you, John, has added some notes here under each division, and this is news to me. Tannehill has completed 80% of his passes when pressured during the preseason. Small sample size, but still, I mean, that's a pretty impressive number.
No, that's an irrelevant sample size. It's preseason football. Jeez, come on. Klemko, we just did this. 80%, which is a nice round number. So that could be 4 out of 5. That might be 8 out of 10. And also, this whole idea of when pressured, everybody's definition of pressure is different. This is a problem I have with this Pro Football Focus guys and all these, and even my buddies at Football Outsiders, all these advanced stat analytics it's subjective statistics. What's pressure for one guy is not pressure for another guy. And what if the guy is interpreting pressure that's not really there? Are we counting that as pressure if he's acting like he's under pressure? I have absolutely no idea what this statistic means. And if John Daigle does this on a weekly basis, he ought to be fired because this is pointless.
Boy, I hope the PFF guys don't listen to our podcast here. You've just laid down the gauntlet.
Well, no, Hornsby and I have Neil Hornsby, the producer. You know, Peter King took Neil and myself out to dinner 2 years ago under the explicit intention of seeing a cat fight between two grown men.
That sounds like something Peter would definitely do.
Yeah, and he sat down and announced they sat us across from each other. Don Banks was there. It was the four of us. And he just wanted to see us go at each other. And it didn't wind up happening because I think Hornsby and I have a mutual respect for one another. But I'm not a stats guy. I'm not an advanced stats guy because even like that article I wrote a few years ago about Andrew Luck's the most productive scrambling quarterback in the NFL, I was shocked at how many people responded to that because the article, and they treated it like gospel. I realized if you want to get respect, put a statistic onto whatever you say, mm-hmm. because they acted like Andrew Luck was a perfect runner, when in fact it was totally based on just my subjective analysis of him running. And what is one man's opinion of a play is not the next man's opinion. So it's stuff that you can't quantify. I did it under a big asterisk, and it was something I was just doing on the side of NFL Films, and people paid attention to it. So this whole, to me, that Andrew Luck scrambling stat, Tannehill under pressure stat, it's not, you got to define that stuff more. I mean, what are we actually talking about? And how much pressure as well? Is Tannehill getting hit when he's throwing these balls? Is there a guy breathing down his neck? What defines pressure on any of this type of stuff?
Let's move on to the AFC North before you get too deep into your criticisms of modern football analytics. You and I completely agree on this division, as we do the next division, the AFC South. In the North, we've both got the Ravens winning it, the Steelers second place, the Bengals in third, and the Browns in fourth. Seems pretty clear-cut to me. We talked about the injury to Steelers center Marquise Pouncey last week. Make a case for the Bengals to finish in second place in this division, if you can, and then give me the reason why you don't think it'll happen.
Well, the case would be the Bengals are a well-put-together offense with no weaknesses. Now, we could argue about Dalton all day, but let's agree that Dalton is a decent professional quarterback. All right, I think
he's the Mendoza line of quarterbacks. I think he's as bad of a quarterback as you can have and still win a Super Bowl with a great, great, great supporting cast.
Well, that's exactly what the Bengals are betting on. I mean, that's exactly how they built their team. And so, to the Bengals' credit, they understand what Andy Dalton is, and they have built around him by investing heavily in a running game, drafting Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard in the last 2 years, both in the second round. They've invested in the offensive line. They drafted offensive tackles in the first two rounds this season, and they already had a very good line to begin with, and they're keeping their receiving core intact, and they're going to re-sign A.J. Green most likely. So when you are average at quarterback, what that means is you have to be very good, if not great, in every other faculty on the field. And the Bengals, you know, they're close to that. So that's the case for them. Defensively, it's the same kind of thing. It's a team without a lot of weakness. They return, I think they return all 11 starters from a year ago. It's, assume if we're calling Drake Kirkpatrick a starter, who he basically replaced Newman late last season, Terrence Newman. It's a defense that's been in the same system for several years. I guess Michael Johnson isn't a returning starter, but he's been there before. But it's a defense that has cohesiveness and has been in a very good scheme. It's now under Paul Gunther. My only concern, and the case for them winning or getting second place, if Vontaze Burfict stays healthy, then this is a 10-6, 11-5 caliber team that we've seen before because of the stuff I just talked about. But my concern with them is that Burfict hasn't been healthy, and when he's out of the lineup, their blitz packages get minimized because of what they do with double A-gap stuff, where they put the linebackers up on the line right over the center. If you're going to play that way, you need athletic linebackers, and you need guys who can also be pass defenders as linebackers. Burfict gives them that dimension. Without that, they lack the second linebacker needed to go with Emmanuel Lemur there. And I know this sounds like I'm picking nits, but we saw it last year. They were a very vanilla defense without Vontaze Burfict. And while I think it's a decent defense, I don't think it's a group that's quite good enough to thrive week in and week out while playing vanilla.
Well, I think you're misattributing what made them so vanilla. I think losing Geno Atkins really hurt some of their flexibility and made them play a little bit more conservatively because they didn't have that guy up front demanding double and triple teams. I think that was the biggest factor in terms of why they took a step back on defense.
Well, right. Yeah, you mean like not having Geno Atkins as the dominant player that he was? Because he was back last year. He wasn't the same guy.
He was back, but he wasn't in 2013 form.
I think Paul Gunther, their D coordinator, would agree with that. And supposedly Atkins has regained that form. We'll wait and see when the games count how he looks. But if what you're saying is correct, if Atkins is still his, you know, the B-grade version of himself that he was a year ago, then yeah, I think that's also as big a factor as Vontaze Burfict. And by the way, Atkins and Burfict, we're talking about the guys that play right up the middle of this defense, right in the center of it.
Yeah. The next division that we want to talk about, the AFC South, and we're just cycling through here. Again, this is our NFL preview. Tweet us at Andy_Benoit or at Robert Klimko with compliments or criticisms. We will treat it as a suggestion box. Want to talk about the AFC South. Both you and I think it finishes Colts, Texans, Jags, Titans. Now, here's what we know about the Texans here. We found out in the last week that Arian Foster should be back between weeks 2 and 4. Do you think that makes them good enough to steal a wild card berth in the AFC?
It might. I mean, it's basically then we're looking at the same team they were a year ago, only with Brian Hoyer under center. I know you don't think very highly of the Texans, but we've had discussions about them in previous shows.
No, I don't, but I have a little bit more optimism for them this year because I do think that DeAndre Hopkins is going to have a breakout season as a number one wide receiver. It all depends on whoever ends up playing quarterback for them, not turning the ball over, and the defense, you know, really revolves around J.J. Watt. I think they're a miserable football team without him on that side of the ball.
That's, I mean, miserable is maybe a bit strong. You know, I mean, what do you think of the Wilfork addition? See, I think that you put him with Watt together, and I think that's a near impossible defense to run against, not just because they're two good players, great players, but because you can align those guys in so many different positions.
How much does Wilfork have left, though? I mean, I think you would agree that he's taken a couple steps back from, you know, what he was in his prime with the Patriots.
I don't know. I mean, he's maybe taken a step back, but I don't think he's taken much more than that. I mean, this guy was on the field for about 3 out of every 4 snaps a year ago. He still showed lateral movement skills. He got off blocks. He ate up gaps. He did all the stuff that he's always done. I think Vince Wilfork's got plenty left. I think New England is just doing what they tend to do, which is cut and bait a year too early rather than risking it being a year too late.
Which is pretty smart. It seems as though they're the only team that really does that successfully and consistently. I'm trying to think.
Yeah, Pittsburgh used to do it in the Bill Cowher era. Yeah. They would get rid of especially their linebackers, and it worked out well for them. But now they go back and re-sign a lot of these guys that they get rid of. Yeah. So I think what we ultimately need to do, let's wrap up and go AFC West, and then you and I need to talk Ravens-Colts.
Sounds
because
good.
Because that's what we agree on, what these guys are within their division, but I think we differ on where they will wind up.
Yeah. Well, here's one of our only division-winning disagreements here.
I think it is the only. I guess the NFC South we disagreed, didn't we?
Yeah. Well, I say the Chiefs win the AFC West. You say the Broncos. We agree that the Chargers and Raiders finish 3rd and 4th. The reasons are obvious why anybody would pick the Broncos. Their level of success that Peyton Manning has maintained over the last couple of seasons is hard to discount. The reason I picked the Chiefs, I think that they got a lot better on offense by adding Jeremy Maclin. I think they might actually throw a touchdown to a wide receiver this year. I think having Travis Kelce healthy and watching him in training camp and in preseason, I do think he's going to have a big impact on this offense, especially as a red zone threat. I think Jamaal Charles has 2 or 3 really good years left in him as a running back. And I think with a healthy Mike DeVito on defense, and you're going to have to remind me of the other player that they lost last year early in the season.
Oh, Derek, you're thinking of Derek Johnson.
Derek Johnson. Having those two guys back healthy, provided they can stay healthy for the entire season, I think they're a much better team. And I think that they steal at least one, if not two games of their meetings with the Broncos.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you make, is it's probably going to come down to their meetings with Denver. The Maclin thing, I've thought a lot about this, and I wrote about it in the Kansas City Deep Dive preview. The whole idea they didn't have a touchdown to a wide receiver, I don't think that matters that much in this system. I don't think it's an offense. It's certainly not an offense built around wide receivers, and I don't think it's one that necessarily needs dynamic receivers. Now, I do think the Macklin signing was a good one because what I just said, you can't take that too far. You can't be bad at wide receiver, and that's what they were before. They had absolutely no firepower there. But this is an offense that's built with defined reads and zone cover beating routes, and it's an offense built to make Alex Smith comfortable. That's why, you know, he throws into large voids. He's not a tight window thrower. That's why his interceptions are low and his completion rate's pretty good every year for a guy with a decent arm, but nothing more than a decent arm. And if you're built like manufacturing offense, designing it like that, then it's the guy you mentioned, Travis Kelce, it's Jamaal Charles, it's the mismatch makers, the guys that you can't decide whether to defend with a safety or a linebacker or a cornerback. Those are the key guys, and I think Andy Reid does a great job of building defined reads around those guys, and now he's got a weapon to use in Macklin, but I don't see them splitting Macklin out wide all by himself on the weak side the way the Cowboys do with, say, a Dez Bryant or the way the Falcons would do with Julio Jones. I don't see them doing that with Macklin and having him just, hey, you go win one-on-one, we'll make plays with you. I think Macklin's going to be plugged in as a puzzle piece to the system, and therefore I don't think he's going to be I don't think it's going to make a whole lot of difference on this offense approach-wise versus what we saw a year ago. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. Here's the thing. Alex Smith, for all of his time in Kansas City, has been a solid game manager, play-action quarterback. But what I think Kansas City fans lament is the fact that when it gets down to the two-minute drill or Alex needs to make a play to bring them back in a game-winning play, he doesn't make it. And I think a lot of that has to do with not having the adequate receiving options, not having the third and long guy that you can look at and say, I'm going to force one to this guy and he's going to make a catch. I don't know if Jeremy Macklin is that player. It doesn't sound like you think he's that player, but he's certainly an upgrade on all of the wide receivers that they've had in the past since Alex Smith has been there.
I agree. I think Macklin's a good, solid second-tier wide receiver. So he would rank, you know, somewhere between 8 and 15 in the NFL if I were to rank each of these guys. That's good. I mean, that's well above average. That's better than half the teams in the league would have, theoretically. So I think he is, but stylistically, just because they have that, I don't think they're going to play that way. Alex Smith has made a few plays late in games. I remember, like, against the Saints in the playoffs with the Niners the year before Kaepernick, so 2011, he made a few throws late in the game. But the fact that that's the play I remember, and I'm talking about the QB sweep, but also I think he had a seam ball, a seam pass that was critical. You're 100% right. They were going back quite a ways there, and that's picking out just two isolated plays. Alex Smith's not the guy you want to have throwing if you're in an obvious throwing situation. And whether his receiver's Macklin or not, I don't think that makes a whole lot of a difference, because if the guy's not that kind of thrower, it doesn't matter who he's throwing to.
Is there any reason to believe that San Diego makes that leap and finishes second or even first in the division?
It wouldn't shock me if they do. I don't know if there's like reason to actively believe it, like to go out and champion the cause. But if they can stay healthy on defense, it's a young, talented defense, really. And then I'm real intrigued to see how they do with Melvin Gordon, because what they're basically going to be is a three-receiver offense with a power running game. They drafted Gordon in the first round. They signed Orlando Franklin. They got DJ Fluker moved inside, and Joe Barksdale at right tackle. Both guys are over 320 pounds. And they re-signed King Dunlap, another huge 320-plus pounder. So it's a mauling offense with a power running game that can also throw out of three-receiver sets. It's a very modern approach to football. So I'm curious. If they went 12-4, I wouldn't be shocked. But, obviously I picked them third for a reason. Let's tell you about FanDuel. The NFL season is less than a month away, and our new sponsor, FanDuel, is excited to kick off another year of action. You've probably heard of it somewhere before. It's one of the most talked about new fantasy sites in the world. And now you can play with up to $200 in bonus cash if you use our code THEMMQB. And for FanDuel, if you're not sure what it is, it's a week in and week out fantasy football site. So you don't have the same team all year long. There's winners each week, new winners each week. You draft a new team each week, and the payouts are enormous. This year, it's going to be over $75 million a week Entry fees start at just $1. There's a league for everyone, and they're already ready to go. They've been ready to go for several weeks with these week one games. Those games are up and live in the FanDuel lobby. So over 1 million people have already won money playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and use the code THEMMQB, and you can sign up now. And as we've mentioned, there's a special offer for new users. Every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. So that's a bonus of up to $200. It's only good for the first 50 people that use the code this week. And again, the code THEMMQB. So don't get left out. FanDuel.com.
So for the last portion of the show, I say we quickly run through our NFC and AFC championship predictions, and then we talk about our Super Bowl winners and why. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got the Seahawks over the Cowboys in the NFC, the Colts over the Patriots in the AFC, which would make it a Colts-Seahawks Super Bowl. What's your Super Bowl?
I've got Baltimore over Indianapolis in the AFC, and then I settled for Green Bay over Dallas in the NFC. I've got hesitation with both teams. The NFC is not very strong this year. People aren't talking about that as much. They say the AFC is wide open. To me, it's not as wide open. I don't think New England's close to the team they were a year ago. I think it's clearly Baltimore and Indy as the two best teams. That doesn't mean that's who's going to be there, but I think there's a clear-cut two best teams. NFC, I'm not so sold on any of these teams. I mean, I'm not as confident as I am in Baltimore as I am in any NFC team.
And you put the Packers in the Super Bowl, yes?
Yeah, I picked the Packers in the Super Bowl.
I'd like to know what makes you so confident given that they've just lost Jordy Nelson, which is as big a preseason injury blow to any team as we've seen this year.
Well, I mean, you know, again, I'm not super confident in it, but I think Nelson is replaceable. Now, does that mean they're going to find a guy as good as him? No, but what it means is that they're going to continue to function on offense with the same approach and relatively the same productivity that they have before. And you've still got Randall Cobb, so you can dictate matchups by where you choose to align him. Devontae Adams will get better. Quietly, this offensive line in Green Bay has gotten very, very good, and they've all been together now for several years. And of course, we know who's at quarterback for them. So I don't see, to me, if we talked about a few weeks ago, with Nelson being out, it just redistributes the production on Green Bay's offense. It doesn't diminish from it. I think they can compensate, in other words.
So I'm going to get into my Super Bowl pick and why I think it happens. Again, I've got the Seahawks and the Colts in that game. I do think the Seahawks come back playing in their third Super Bowl in 3 years and win it this time. I think going through the whole country on the training camp tour really gives you a feel for how locker rooms operate. And you kind of get a sense of which places are the guys there for the paycheck, where they're coasting by, which places are full of leaders. And which places aren't. You go to a place like Jacksonville, and you know, you wonder who's taking ownership of this team, who really is invested about being here and is good enough to be vocal about it. And there really isn't anybody. You go to Seattle, and it's the complete opposite. There's 10 of those guys. There's 10 guys who are Pro Bowl caliber players, could be in Pro Bowls, you know, in any given year, and are loud and emotional about winning on that football team. And it's different than anywhere else I've been in the league. I read Greg Bishop's story in this week's SI. And this week you have one of the covers, don't you?
Yeah, I have the Midwest. You'll see it. It's in your neighborhood, the Chicago cover.
Yeah, I'm excited to read that. But I read Greg Bishop's story. The West Coast cover is Russell Wilson, on how these guys got together in Hawaii under, you know, Russell Wilson's, with his invitation, and kind of just hashed out everything. And after that, I was convinced these guys, they're coming back, and I think they'll win it this time.
Well, how about the AFC? Indianapolis is the trendy pick. You've got them Is it the factor of Andre Johnson and Frank Gore adding to the offense just enough? Do you think the defense will be better? And if so, why? What's your reasoning behind the AFC?
Well, I kind of resent the fact that you say it's a trendy pick just because it kind of colors my pick as kind of trendy. And I just would encourage you to go back and look at the two preview articles that the MMQB did prior to the last two seasons. I've got the Colts in the Super Bowl both of those years. So this is kind of this is the wagon that I've hitched my reputation to for the past three seasons. And
all right, well, it's a trendy wagon now. There, are you happy now? Do you want to? Can you explain the wagon then?
Well, I do agree with you that the AFC is looking a little bit weak. In any other year in the past 3 years, I would have picked the Patriots. But you have some key losses from that Super Bowl team, including some guys that we've mentioned. Brandon Browner comes to mind.
Revis comes to mind.
Well, Revis is the big one. I don't believe that they are good enough to win home field advantage over the Colts, who are playing in a division that they should dominate. I don't believe that they will earn home field advantage, and I think a Colts-Patriot matchup between Andrew Luck and Tom Brady is going to come down to who wins the home field, who has the home field advantage.
Well, the last time those teams played in Indianapolis, New England ran for well over 200 yards against them.
Right. And I think that while Indianapolis hasn't gotten measurably better on defense, I think they will be considerably better on offense. You mentioned Frank Gore. You mentioned Andre Johnson. I think that they've got three or four young receivers led by T.Y. Hilton who are really coming into their own. And by the end of the season, we're going to be calling them the best receiving group in the NFL.
And it helps that they're playing with a guy who very well could be called the best quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, certainly. Now, you say for your Super Bowl prediction, you have the Packers and remind me.
The Ravens, and I have the Ravens winning it. And it was, honestly, I hate these predictions because I don't know who to pick. I had a pretty easy time with this one this year. In going through each team in my film notes from last year and writing the previews, Baltimore clearly stood out to me as a team just equipped to do this. I think very highly of Joe Flacco. I think you can run any type of offense with him. I think he's a bona fide superstar. Mark Trestman's going to keep the zone running game intact. That's the best zone blocking offensive line in the league. And we saw the productivity because of that with Justin Forsett a year ago. And then defensively, this team is young and in all the right places. And I'm going to give you a few names of guys that I think will be Pro Bowl caliber players for him. And I'm going to start backwards. And maybe Pro Bowl caliber is a bit strong, but upper tier guys, difference makers. Will Hill is number five. It's at safety for him. He can cover tight ends. He gives them dimension. Timmy Jernigan, a defensive line, who's, I guess, tasked supposedly replacing Haloti Ngata. But I would say Jernigan mixed with Brandon Williams, who's one of the league's best nose tackles. Nobody knows about him. But both of those guys give this line more initial dynamicism, more burst and power off the snap than they've had in recent years. And then, you know, maybe Carl Davis, a third-round rookie, adds an element as well. And then at linebacker, C.J. Mosley, who I think did make the Pro Bowl a year ago. And the last and certainly not least, because we're doing this backwards, number one to me, the difference maker is Jimmy Smith, who can cover number one wide receivers, including he's a big body cornerback. So many number one receivers right now are big bodied guys, and even the elite corners have trouble matching up to him because the size just doesn't match up. You don't have that problem with Jimmy Smith. He's excellent against bigger body guys. And I know there are guys on that Ravens coaching staff a year ago who felt that if Jimmy Smith had stayed healthy, they would have beaten New England in the divisional round, and it would have been them facing Seattle, not the Patriots.
Well, you heard it here first. Andy Benoit, Super Bowl champion, is the Baltimore Ravens. Mine are the Seattle Seahawks. We thank you for joining us for another episode of the MMQB podcast. Tweet us at, what's the hashtag, Andy?
The MMQB Podcast.
The MMQB Podcast on Twitter. You can download it on iTunes on Thursdays. Thank you to our researcher, John Daigle, our producer, Dan Bloom, our wonderful editors who make it possible for us to just get this done every day and for y'all to listen to it. Please join us next week, and good luck.
All right.
All right, man.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.